When I started researching the plant-person connection for my book, Growing Joy, something that really surprised me was how limited my view of the plant-person relationship was, constrained to basically sight and taste. I knew that I could enjoy looking at my plants and, when appropriate, eating the ones that I grew, but I realized that I was pretty disconnected from my three other senses and what they could offer me when it came to my plant collection and my connection to them. You know, as kids, we intuitively know how to engage our five senses and creativity in basically everything we do, whether it's playing in the mud, learning to talk, making potions, marveling at bird sounds, and more. But as adults, we sometimes have to remind ourselves. I think that's the fun part about plants, that they are a ever-growing opportunity for us as adults to reconnect with our inner child. So this beautiful conversation with one of my favorite Bloom and Grow Radio guests, Mark Hachaturian, is all about our senses and feelings with plants. It is a very special episode, so welcome back to
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Oh, plant friends, hello. I hope you've had beautifully planty weeks. This has been the most wild couple of months of my life. To say planty is an understatement. With the launch of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness and Plants, my new book that is out. Thank you so much to those of you who have already purchased the book. I've started hearing from those of you who have read the book and hearing what it means to you and how you're immediately applying the practices in the book to your life is honestly probably the highlight of my life. The idea that this book is reaching more people and helping people connect with themselves and connect with nature is by far the biggest honor and proudest accomplishment ever. Okay, no crying. So anyway, thank you. And if you're interested in learning more about the book, there are details in the show notes. And this conversation is actually a live taping of the podcast that happened at the New York Botanical Garden last month in celebration of the launch of the book. I'm so lucky that the New York Botanical Garden hosted me for an epic afternoon. We did this live taping that you're about to hear. We had a sensory experience in the Rose Garden. Oh my God, the Rose Garden was in full bloom. Plant friends, I can't say enough wonderful things about the New York Botanical Garden. If you're local, and I know this probably goes for any botanical garden, but I lived in the city for 10 years and I only started going to the botanical garden when I got into plants. And it's just crazy how accessible NYBG is to people who live in New York City and the tri-state area and how people aren't just there all the time, every day. I mean, I can't recommend going enough. There's always something fun going on. And this event was truly special. You can see clips of it on my Instagram, but it was a beautifully full circle moment. The fun story that I'll tell very quickly here is the first event that I ever did for Bloom and Grow Radio was actually in the bookshop at New York Botanical Garden. They have a plant sale every year. And when I was up and coming, NYBG offered to have me, you know, basically do a pop-up poster where I like stood next to a poster and told people about my podcast. And so the fact that they hosted me for an event celebrating my book launch and that my book is now sold in their shop was very full circle and emotional for me. But anyway, this conversation with Mark Hachaturian, he's the director of Glasshouse Horticulture at NYBG, is all about our senses and feelings with plants. Mark is just so special. You've heard him on the podcast before. We did an episode on begonias. I think we did one other episode. He's a frequent flyer of Bloom and Grow Radio and an amazing just brainiac and plant daddy. And he has so many beautiful insights. I think it's interesting as we talked about, you know, engaging our senses, we talked about hearing and we were definitely in a flight path of some airplanes. So you might hear some auditory intervention throughout the podcast. It was live. So hang in there. It's totally worth the listen though. Speaking of book launch events, before we dive into this conversation, I also just want to say that I'm so excited to announce that I'm going to be doing several more live book events with Terrain, which is the very cool plant shop and nursery run by Anthropology all over the Northeast. So we're starting with their Westport, Connecticut, and their Glen Mills, Pennsylvania locations. They're happening in July. More details are in the links in the show notes, but it's going to be an amazing evening. We're doing plant swaps, botanical cocktails, so much more, book signing. So you can go to bloomandgrowradio.com/book for more details. And we do have a couple more live events that we're rustling up around the country. And if you are interested in hosting or helping with a live event, please reach out to me at maria@bloomandgrowradio.com to discuss further. Okay, I think that's all the housekeeping for now. Obviously, we've got a lot of stuff going on in the midst of this book launch, all in service to get this book to as many people as humanly possible and hopefully make the world a kinder and greener place because of it. Isn't that wild? So without further ado, let's dive into Engaging Our Senses with Mark Hachaturian. Okay. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the live taping of Bloom and Grow Radio. So excited to have you all here today to talk about engaging our senses at New York Botanical Garden.
Yes, thank you all for coming today. I'm really excited about this, and I think the most exciting thing is finally meeting you in person.
I know.
We met at the beginning of the pandemic, and mm-hmm. it's been kind of this journey of just meeting, talking to each other through Zoom, so many things these days, but it's really nice to have you at the garden, but also to be here, meet you
IRL.
Face-to-face.
finally, after so many Zoom calls. So, Mark, for those of you, before we dive into this live taping of Bloom and Grow Radio that we're going to be doing, do you want to introduce yourself and let everyone know?
Sure, absolutely. I'm Mark Hachaturian. I'm the director of Glasshouse Horticulture here at the New York Botanical Garden. I'm also the senior curator of orchids, and many of you who've come to the orchid shows know me kind of as running around and doing stuff there. But my role at the garden is I'm part of the team that creates essentially the living content that's grown for the gardens, grounds, and exhibitions here. Mm-hmm. So I am a part of the faculty, I'm a part of the curatorial staff, and a part of just about every part of the visitor experience here about the New York Botanical Garden, and part of that team of people that helps create the content and the beauty and the sensory experiences that you all share when you come to here.
And you are quite the plant daddy.
Yeah, I have a bit of a problem. I'm a bit of a plant addict. It's a long time thing. I have my garden at home, my greenhouse at home, and I don't get enough work here with plants. I also am an avid plant collector and gardener at home.
Mm-hmm. Especially with those orchids.
Yes, me and my orchids, my kids. That's my specialty. But as many of my friends will tell you who know me as a plants person, no plant is safe. I love everything about gardens and gardening, flowers, botany, horticulture, you name it. Whether you're growing them for the pure enjoyment or you're using them in cooking, I'm all about it.
I love it. And for those of you that don't know me, hi, I'm Maria. I'm the host of the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast and the author of Growing Joy, the Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness and Plants. It's very exciting. For those of you here that end up getting a book today, you're going to be the first people to have Growing Joy in your hands because it actually doesn't come out for another few weeks. New York Botanical Garden has an exclusive advanced set of books for you guys. Growing Joy is really about how we can use plants and plant care and engaging with nature to cultivate our own inner garden, right? To use plant care as self-care. And when I was researching this book, I think one of the most interesting things that came up as I was going through all of the studies that talk about truly how plants and engaging with nature and plants can help us lead happier, more connected lives. The concept of senses really came up because I think for plants, we see them as this very visual thing, right? We see plants, but there are other senses going on that I think we can really cultivate and learn how to engage to lead a more enriched life. So I'd love to pick this conversation off with Mark. We're going to have a very fun kind of setup with diving into the senses, but I'd love to kick it off with a reading from the book. Also, before we dive in, I would love to encourage everyone. One of the main themes of Growing Joy is to disconnect from screens and reconnect with yourself and reconnect with nature. So let's just drop in, be present, and enjoy this little curated moment we're going to have, starting with this podcast taping, and then going to the Rose Garden. I've heard it's in spectacular bloom. I can't wait to get over there.
It's absolutely magical.
Right, so we're going to practice what we preach after. But here we go. So to kick off and frame this conversation, this chapter is called Plant Seeds of Delight. When I was a kid, my best friend Jackie and I would play outside in her backyard every day.
Jackie and I had limitless imaginations. We would go on adventures far beyond the scope of her parents' address. One day, we'd be explorers traversing the stone wall along her property line, collecting vacated cicada shells as treasure. The next day, we'd be Secret Service agents collecting information on Mark, ironically, the older boy next door, planning a water balloon war to wage on him and save the planet. We had little regard for the cool kids back then. Frankly, we were pretty weird. Jackie, nicknamed Wacky Jackie, was a natural athlete, tomboy, and wild spirit who had a healthy obsession with books filled with ghost stories that had the other girls in our class spooked. I, the ahead-of-her-time fashionista, wore blue leopard print bell-bottoms and corralled my unruly bangs into a small unicorn horn-like ponytail at the front of my head to keep them out of my face. In hindsight, it was practical, but never became a trend that the popular girls copied. Regardless of what the other kids thought, Jackie and I thought we were awesome. We followed our instincts, enjoyed our imaginations, indulged our curiosity, and really let our inner freak flags fly together. The best adventures were when we would make feasts for imaginary guests out of the materials we found in her backyard. Salads of grass and holly berries, platters of wild and pungent onion grass, and pies made out of mud, and whatever other things were in season. We had no fear when it came to engaging our five senses in our playtime, and no concern for the mud and grass stains our poor mothers had to deal with at the end of the day. So sorry about that, Mom. My mom is here today. Plants are the new mud pies, an opportunity to engage our senses, enjoy the wonderful tactile experience of life, reconnect to our imaginations, and grow our inner worlds and fill them up with joyful, playful moments. Today at New York Botanical Garden, I'm going to encourage you to play and cultivate curiosity like your five-year-old self used to do in the playground. For some reason, as adults, we've lost touch with our imaginations that we had as kids. Society has conditioned us to shed them like old yellow leaves. It's a real bummer because having an imagination and playing is the best. Why that sense of expansion and amusement is reserved for children is beyond me, and I think that we should get over it and just keep playing until we die, not just until we go to college. Being grown up is overrated. So, the first section, how are plants your new mud pies?
Well, first, let me say a huge congratulations to you on this accomplishment of the creation of this book and the message that you're conveying to many people. Because my approach and my life in gardening, and I've been gardening since I was 3 years old, has not only embraced a lot of these concepts, but you've now been able to succeed and put them on paper and define them, which is really, truly magical. Because for those of us, and I know some of the people in the audience included, who love gardens and gardening, it becomes part of your soul, part of who you are. It's not a hobby where it's kind of a pastime and a task. It's something that you embrace wholeheartedly. And in doing so, you develop deep emotional connections to gardens and plants, not only the spaces, the people, but just the act of nurturing and caring. And your concept about the mud pies is very relevant, in my opinion, because a lot of the reasons that people don't explore gardening is, in my opinion, a fear of failure. We don't want to make a mistake. You don't want to get into cooking because you don't want to get caught burning the bottom of the cake or something. But in reality, the joy comes in experimentation. There is that wonder that we lose as we get older. And you find that many gardeners and plant people have retained that sense of wonder, that awe, that inspiring moment of seeing something in bloom, you know, obsessively watching your seeds and when they germinate and hoping that no one sees you jumping up and down and cheering, you know, in the privacy of your home. But it's that thrill of experimentation, that exploration. However you approach gardens and gardening, however you come to gardens and gardening, whether you grew up with it, like my grandmother influenced me in terms of gardens and horticulture, it's something you discovered on your own as an escape, coming here as a form of sanctuary. Mm-hmm. Wherever you enter into that world, it becomes a really wonderful part of your life. And I know myself, who's embraced it not only in my personal life, but also in my professional life. The visitors that we interact with here at the garden are just marveled not only at what we do, but also you hear their stories. You hear what they've accomplished, their joys and successes. And that experimentation of trying something new, whether it's growing a plant that you've never tried before, mm-hmm. or, you know, your first tomato that you harvested from your garden, it's one tomato. But what a treasure it is. That kind of mud pie approach to this is what makes it fun and what connects us to our youth and your stories of adventure and imagination. Because in a garden, we can let ourselves be free, let us ourselves be whoever we want to be. We can be alone, we can be together, we can share, mm-hmm. or we can have a private moment, one with ourselves. And what a lot of this book talks about is sort of not only embracing this, but teaching people to connect not only with themselves, but with this healing aspect that gardens often have.
Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as the world gets more and more filled with content and platforms and screens and phones and apps and all of this stuff, I think it becomes more and more important that you really do have to intentionally create time and space to allow for that connection, right? If you think about 10 years ago, let alone 40 years, people would get up and have their morning, right? Have their coffee. There wouldn't immediately be releasing your agency and your mind to all of these apps. And plants, setting intentional time to spend time with plants, ends up really being intentional time with yourself, because you can spend a whole day and never have an original thought, you know, but finding that time with plants. And I think that's what the garden really provides for so many of us New York people living in New York City, where you're constantly bombarded with a million people on the street, a million thoughts, a million schedules, a million train delays, a million emails. And the garden allows that kind of safe haven on a very large scale. But we can create that safe haven in our own home with a few plants, right? How many houseplant enthusiasts do we have here? Yeah?
Everybody's got... It's okay. You're amongst friends. You could admit it.
You could admit it.
If you have 200 houseplants, no one will judge you. We'll just envy you.
Absolutely. And I think another beautiful thing is we have some houseplant enthusiasts. What about the gardeners? What outdoor gardeners? I know my mom is an amazing outdoor gardener. We've got some outdoor gardeners here. There are so many different entryways for plants, right? Whether it's growing food that you like, and I know that you have the Around the Table exhibition here at New York Botanical Garden is all about that, whether it's growing rare houseplants, whether it's growing your own flowers. There are so many different ways that you can get into this, but however you do it, there's that end result of stillness, connection, quiet. And that's what I think we all need more of in our life, right?
Absolutely. So for me this year, one of the most remarkable things that's happened in my career here in 20-something years at the garden, mm-hmm. was something that I only witnessed once before in the history of my time here, and that was post 9/11. And that we saw again at the end of the pandemic when the garden reopened, people returning to the space and a need to be here at the garden, because for some people, this is their garden. Mm-hmm. They don't have green space at home. They don't have an expanse to where they can kind of escape. But people returning with a need to be here, to be connected, to be grounded, disconnected from their phones and the news and the media, and to be kind of in this space to recenter themselves, but also seeing a lot of gratitude coming from our visitors. Throughout the Orchid Show, our visitors are never hesitant about sharing their opinions, which I love, good or bad. And I've heard it all over the years, and which is great. I love that kind of feedback we get, because that's essentially the reason, one of the reasons we are here is to share what we do. And by getting that feedback, we get that loop, that information in return. And this year's Orchid Exhibition, the message that I received more than any was just thank you, which to me was remarkable, because you realize that what we do as gardeners is a service to ourselves, for us here at the garden, it's for the public.
Yeah.
And we're essentially, it's an act. It's an act of sharing joy and cultivating a space. It's nurturing, it's helping, it's healing. And we saw that very much in the response from our visitors, which I thought was really quite incredible. And never did I ever think that people would be stopping me and, you know, compelled, like literally chasing me down to say, thank you. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for the space you provide. And thank you for the joy of allowing us into sharing and experiencing the senses in a garden space. Quite often, everyone says, well, when you think of a garden, We could go down this line to this audience and say, well, what does a garden mean to you? A garden, for many people, they immediately go to the idea of sanctuary, a peaceful space. But to me, I don't know whether it's because I'm working in that space. A garden is full of life. It's full of activity. It's full of sound. It's full of sense.
Maybe whether a little chaos.
A lot of chaos. Anyone who's weeded knows about chaos. But you realize that gardens are not quiet, still, or lifeless spaces. They're actually dynamic, energetic, and chaotic at times spaces. So that's one of the most remarkable things, is you see people interaction with our space and you see them engaging their senses. But what I love about your book is it draws a focus to it. So people often forget that when you sit down at a meal, the first part of your digestion is your eyes. It's what you see. Your senses complete that experience. You can see that chocolate cake and you know suddenly you're in your brain what that's going to taste like, or at least you hope so.
Yeah.
When you come to a garden and you see the flowers and you see that space, whether you realize it or not, from the sounds around you to the smells to the textures to the touch, you could imagine looking at that grass and you can feel it. Without ever touching it, you can feel it. And that's something that quite often people forget. And I love the idea of the focus of your book, helping teach people how to reconnect with the environment around them through their senses.
Yeah, and I think it's almost, for me, it's not even teaching, it's reminding, right? Because we know these things within ourselves. We're connected to our ancestors who used to be way more naturally involved in their natural surroundings. It's just about reactivating that inner knowing that we already have, that inner healer that we already have. And in the book, I just give you, you know, a million ways to do that, because it's going to look really different for some people. Some people have, you know, smell. Well, let's dive into the senses.
Think about how we interact with the world today, it's very visual.
Yeah.
We're looking at our phones, we're reading, we're seeing.
Yep.
But there's so much more. And I love that. Let's connect with our senses.
Yes.
Yeah, so you have an exercise. I've been warned. I'm really curious to see what she's got in hold for us.
Yeah. So we have all five senses in this little pot. Mark, you will choose. We'll have a little reading inspired about that sense from the book, and then we can kind of riff and go off of it. But today's the theme of today is how can we integrate and expand the connection that we already have. So we'll hit each sense. And today what I hope is everybody from after listening, we're going to go practice what we preach in the Rose Garden. And hopefully we can stimulate one of these senses that might have been a little dormant for you today. So where do we begin? You want to pick? All right. There's no wrong answer. Okay, touch. So with touch, I think, as you said, see, we take for granted. Touch can be a very interesting sense to expand our mindfulness with plants. So in the book, I have this little chart. There's all sorts of things that you can do with your plant care routine. You water your plants, you wipe your leaves, you're going to check for pests, you're going to prune, you're going to do all these things. But maybe there are ways that we can reframe these very kind of transactional actions that we're doing with our plant care routine and integrate it with ourselves and integrate it through touch. So when you're doing these things where you're touching your plants, when you're checking the moisture levels in your soil, instead of just checking the moisture level in your soil, can you have this mindful moment where you're touching the soil, you're feeling it in between your fingers, you're noticing, is it damp? Because damp means that you probably don't have to water anymore. Is it compact? How can I break it up? And then maybe how can you reflect those thoughts onto yourself when that mindful moment of seeing if your plant needs water, maybe you can take a mindful moment and see if you've drank today. I mean, how many days have we gone through where we've only drank coffee all day? Maybe we need to hydrate ourselves, or maybe there's some sort of thing that we need to hydrate our souls for. So for you, what does touch mean to you in your garden?
I have always been an advocate of, I can't garden with gloves on. If I garden with gloves, I wind up pulling out the wrong plants. I have learned through touch I could probably weed my garden with a blindfold on and understand which are the right and which is the wrong. And as you say, your touch, you're sensing moisture, you're sensing temperature, you're sensing the soil. And for me, getting my hands digging in to the soil, feeling that warmth and that energy, you kind of know over time whether you're doing something right, just like a chef knows the exact amount to stir something, the right consistency, the right temperature. It's the same thing that happens in gardens and gardening. Engaging your senses here in terms of observation comes with feel. We're a tactile species.
Yeah.
And that connection, we all know that during the pandemic, one of the things we lost was touch. Mm-hmm. We didn't connect with people. We didn't touch them. We didn't hug. And you miss that. And that can also be in the garden, interacting with your plants, touching, feeling that soil, not being able to connect with that space or being able to connect that with the space is really kind of transformative. It's one of the ways we form emotional bonds with things in our lives.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, a lot of plants, I feel like, that I talk about, reconnecting with plants, reconnecting with your inner child, reconnecting with that simplicity. There's something when, and I highly encourage, as we're here in this amphitheater, there is something that happens when you put your bare feet in the grass and you feel blades of grass in between your toes. There's an immediate relaxation. Not to mention, you're doing something called grounding, which is connecting with the earth's energy, which does all sorts of wonderful things for your body. But that engaging in touch, letting yourself have that mindful moment of feeling that childlike reconnection with the grass. I highly encourage everyone to do that right now.
I love the idea of the feet on the ground. Mm-hmm. So imagine the mud oozing through your toes. Remember that feeling when you go to the beach and it's like partly gross, but you keep doing it because it's fun anyway.
And like pulling up and
The suction and then wiggling your toes in the sand. You know, it's not just sitting on the beach with a drink. You want to dig your feet into the sand. That touch is very important. So make some mud pies. Get the mud in between your toes.
Yeah, get the mud in between your toes. Have some fun. Also, as we go to the rose garden, how many different types of things can you feel and have that moment with it? Within one stem of a rose, you've got that piercing thorn that might bring you back, you know, into the present if your mind is running. You've got the beautifully soft petals. You have the kind of harsher, waxier leaves, you know. So you can close your eyes with that rose and have an entire sensory experience. Not even smelling, right? That's what you're going to think with a rose, but really trying to train yourself to kind of heighten that sense.
And one of the things that I love about that sense of touch is temperature.
Yeah.
You want to know whether your plants are getting too much sun? Feel the leaves. Are the leaves hot or cool to the touch? Is the soil warm or cold? As an orchid person, one of the biggest questions I get is, how do I know when to water my orchid? And observation being one of the most important skills you can have as a gardener is, a terracotta pot that's dry will feel warm to the touch. If there's moisture, it feels cool to the touch. So you can tell how much water is in a container just by touching the surface of it. So that idea of temperature and warmth, you know, whether it's the warmth of the sun on your face or the coolness of the soil on your toes, is very, very important in connecting with your space and the garden, grounding ourselves in that environment.
Absolutely. And for houseplant parents, something if you want to do like watering 2.0, you can train yourself to just be able to pick up your pot and know whether or not your plant needs to be watered without even touching the soil. Because you'll start to, you know, water, pick it up, feel how heavy it is, let it dry out, pick it up, feel how light it is. And you'll be able to kind of develop a deeper relationship with your plant through just by picking it up. Maybe not for you outdoor gardeners, though. Don't try to do that. Okay, should we do the next one?
All right. Here we go. Ooh, this is a good one. Smell for the rose garden.
Smell for the rose garden. Oh my gosh, smell. I learned a lot doing research for this book on smell. I think when you think about plants, especially with houseplants, you don't think about smell as much. So here's a snippet of Growing Joy about smell. Of all of our senses, smell is the most powerful and unique because our nose is a straight shot to the part of our brain associated with long-term memories and emotion. How many of us know that? You smell. Even if I smell like an old deodorant, it'll take me like immediately back to the time I used to wear that and however old I was when I used to wear it. When we are in nature, we're benefiting not only from the view, but from the relaxing effect of the scent of trees and plants. Fun fact, most of the smells we associate with plants, fragrant roses, freshly cut grass, invigorating eucalyptus, are actually the plant's way of communicating with itself and its environment. Who knew? Well, scientists like Mark did. Plants release VOCs, volatile organic compounds, through their epidermal tissue in order to ward off herbivores, attract a pollinator, or even communicate with other parts of itself or other plants around it. Another fun but sad fact, the smell of fresh-cut grass that we all know and love is actually the poor little blades of grass alerting their other blade friends, intruder, we're being attacked, beware. Poor little grassy guys. Now that we've established that plant scents are more than just a fun thing to collect for your aromatherapy collection, let's talk about some fun plant smells and their effects on the human body. Phytoncides are the VOCs emitted by trees. We're definitely, definitely enjoying the rewards of them to defend themselves against unwanted visitors like fungi, insects, and bacteria. Dr. King Lee discovered that research subjects who slept with hinoki stem oil, hinoki is a Japanese tree, you can buy the stem oil and diffuse it. So when subjects slept with hinoki stem oil diffused in the air, they slept longer and had decreased levels of stress hormones than the ones that didn't. Other studies show that the presence of phytoncides can lift your mood, lower your blood pressure, suppress your sympathetic nervous activity, and increase your parasympathetic nervous activity. Here's one more fun plant smell that I would love for everybody to get to know. And as we're feeling a few drops, I wonder if we'll be able to enjoy it today. Drops of rain. Geosmin. So, you know, after it rains, there's that funky, earthy, invigorating smell outside. That's actually petrichor, which is the effect of geosmin, a compound secreted by bacteria found in soil, which is released into the air after it rains. And humans are very sensitive to the presence of geosmin, likely because it was an indication of the presence of water, and we tend to immediately have that calm. I mean, do you ever go for a post-rain walk?
Constantly.
Yeah, there's something just so intoxicating about that smell of the earth after it rains.
One of the first things I do after it rains is I want to open all the windows to get that smell and that sense and how calming it is, not only with the moisture and that humidity, but that odor.
Yes.
And
that petrichor,
so
baby.
We pulled out smell, the first thing I thought of was petrichor.
Yeah.
First thing I thought of. But, you know, in terms of for me in a garden, other than the obvious, the smell of the fragrance of flowers, herbs, and foliage, there are good smells and there are bad smells. Mm-hmm. You know the difference between the smell of good earth versus bad earth. Like if anyone had a container that's gotten overwatered, and it has that kind of slightly rotten egg smell.
Green kind of,
It's got, you know, it's gone over. Mm-hmm. Well, that's important to a gardener. You know that the health of your soil is based on that smell, whether you realize it or not. the smell of just working in the garden, you know, the smell of green. You know, we often describe it as the green notes and fragrance have to do with the scents of plants, beyond that of flowers, the smell of bark, the smell of cedar, the smell of leaves,
yep,
dry versus fresh. To me, one of the most incredible things is sense memory. Just a tiny bit of fragrance, whether it's cinnamon of grandma's apple pie or that cologne or perfume that that person in high school who sat in front of you used to wear drove you crazy.
Yeah.
It's something that immediately can bring you back to a time, a place, an emotion. And it's something to me that's very, very powerful.
Yeah, I had a really interesting experience right when I was getting into plants. You know, we'll talk about this when we talk about sea, but once you get into plants, all of a sudden you can't stop seeing plants. You go through this phase where, you know, once you've started collecting houseplants, it's like every, you know, restaurant I've been to 100 times, all of a sudden I notice, you know, the huge Hoya that's in the window or something like that.
And while the plane is going over.
Yeah.
I would love to just, I know it's almost not exactly time to pull the lines, but favorite smell. Anyone. Shout out a smell.
Shout it out.
Favorite smell.
Roses.
You're in the right place.
Peonies.
Peonies. Lilacs.
Lilacs. Oh, yeah.
Eucalyptus.
Gardenia.
Gardenia.
Nice.
We got an expert here.
We got a gardener over there.
Next level.
Lavender. Me too. Oh, me too.
But that favorite fragrance, what is that triggering? It's not the enjoyment of the perfume. It's how it makes you feel.
Yeah.
It takes you back to a place, a time, a memory. It's not the fragrance of the bloom. It's the emotional response that it triggers is why you love that fragrance.
And it's incredibly powerful. Your olfactory system, it is one of the strongest senses that you have. I experienced this. I was in a restaurant with my sister and my mom. I noticed this plant that I couldn't identify back then. I smelled it. It was a geranium. And I was immediately transported to my grandma's porch. My grandma had since passed. It had been decades since I had been in her house. But my grandma had this like screened in porch and had tons and tons of geraniums there. And the interesting thing is I totally took my grandma's plant. She was a crazy plant lady, a very happy plant lady. I took it for granted. I have almost no memories, like visual memories. If I close my eyes, I have very few visual memories of my grandma's porch and her garden. But the smelling of that geranium, that kind of acidic, almost sour smell of that, you know, the classic pelargonium, immediately brought me back to my grandma. And those other senses aren't as strong. I can't remember the sight. I can't remember the touch. But that smell transported me back. And I do feel like it's a very powerful sense that we don't give enough weight to when we're so visual as plant people. So I can't wait to get to those roses.
Oh, you'll be in heaven in the rose garden.
Yes.
The next sense, let's see. Taste. There we go. There's a good one.
Taste. Here we go. Okay. So many of us are disconnected from the food we eat. I'm sure you know at least one person who couldn't tell you how cashews grow, or what an eggplant flower looks like, or that herbs don't come from small plastic boxes in the refrigerated section of the grocery store. There might be children right now that think that. Growing your own food, even if it's just a small planter of herbs, is the most empowering feeling. It also happens to empower your bank account with all the money that you end up saving on those pricey containers of the wilted basil at the grocery store. Some of my most cherished family memories are picking tomatoes off my mom's tomato plants with my sister and watching my mom flail a zucchini the size of a turkey leg in the air, shouting in delight at the enormous harvest. She'd then take those zucchini flowers, coat them in flour, and fry them in olive oil, like my Italian cousins do, to feel more connected to them, even if we are oceans away. Herbs were our gateway drug into plant parenthood. My journey to Happy Plant Lady started with a small planter of herbs on our balcony. That summer, my husband and I took our homegrown basil and made pints of pesto so delicious I would eat it with a spoon out of the refrigerator. We'd snip chives and scramble them into our eggs in the morning. It became a welcome addition to our morning practice. And our meals were elevated by our herbal garnishes, and we felt new ownership over the meals that we were making because we were responsible for growing some of that food that we were enjoying. Taste is another one where I think sometimes plant parents, especially us houseplant parents, take for granted. But taste is such a wonderful way to get reconnected with the food we ate. And there's such a connection that our society, especially these younger generations, are missing with reconnecting to really understanding that.
I mean, hopefully most people are not eating their houseplants.
Yes.
But in reality, you know, the sense of taste, whether you're talking about herbs, you think about how many of our foods are seasoned, flavored by herbs and spices, whether they be coming from your garden mm-hmm. or your spice rack.
Yeah.
Cinnamon is the ground bark of a tree. Vanilla is the aromatic compounds produced by the fermentation mm-hmm. of an orchid seed pod. Chocolate, coffee, both roasted seeds mm-hmm. that are then utilized. And we don't think about them as plant parts when we're cooking with them. We just think about them as ingredients in our recipes.
Yeah.
But, you know, really, pesto on pasta, you can't get much better than that.
Absolutely.
You have
not.
So many things where the sense of taste are, even if it's just the glass of wine you have as you're strolling through the garden, admiring the results of your hard
yes.
work, or the reward at the end of the day from a hard, long day of weeding. Taste is one of the most important senses because it's also connected to our sense of smell, as we all learned in COVID, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so the idea of sense and smell and taste being connected, as you harvest those herbs, you don't just smell them, you taste them. You can taste them before you even get them in your mouth. And that's what I love about the idea of gardens and gardening is that there also is that ability to produce something mm-hmm. that you can then cook and eat and enjoy those rewards beyond that of the visual rewards. The
yeah.
culinary rewards for gardens and gardening are very numerous.
Thank you to our episode sponsors, Territorial Seed Company and Espoma Organic. Plant friends, everyone knows that spring is the prime time for starting your garden for harvest in the summer, but did you know with the right timing and varieties, in many places you can actually grow year-round, and I bet no matter what climate you're in, there's probably something that you could grow to extend your gardening season that you're unaware of. Territorial Seed Company carries a special selection of vegetable, flower, and herb seeds that are perfect to start in the summer through the fall for a harvest late fall, winter, or even overwinter. These plants include brassicas, root crops, lettuce and greens. Personally, I've loved growing lettuce this year. Onions and more, and they're kind of famous for their huge selection of garlic, which is a gem of the winter garden. The way garlic works in the Northern Hemisphere is you plant it in the fall, and then you actually harvest it the following summer. And Melody and I grew garlic in her garden last year, and I have to tell you, nothing beats plucked from the earth garlic. It's spicy, it's pungent, it's amazing, and so worth it. And you should be grown with Territorial Seed Company. For over 40 years, they've been helping enable gardeners to be more self-sufficient, providing everything necessary to grow bountiful, great-tasting, fresh-from-the-garden food year-round. I know, because this is my second year growing with them. And they're offering an exclusive coupon code for Bloom & Grow Radio listeners at territorialseed.com. Use the code GROW10, that's GROW10, at checkout for 10% off at territorialseed.com. Oh, plant friends, we know that I adore Espoma Organic. They are a family. I'm giggling because I feel like all I do is shout their praises from all the planty mountaintops. If you don't know about Espoma, they are a family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. We are deep into growing season right now, which means it's time to talk about feeding and fertilizer, plant friends. We know that I love Espoma Organic's line of potting mixes, which I planted up all my grow bags this year, but I'm so thankful for their line of fertilizers and plant foods that make fertilizing easy and simple because it can get so confusing and overwhelming. So I feel like with fertilizing, there's two types of people. There's liquid fertilizer people, and then there's granular fertilizer people, and they've got something for either type. So if you're a liquid person, they actually recently launched their 16-ounce liquid fertilizers, so larger containers. And I love their liquid fertilizers because they just make it so easy. It's literally like laundry detergent. You pour it in the cap, you pour it in your watering can, and boom, you're done. All you have to do is water your plants with that fertilized water. And they have their liquids in their famous tomato fertilizer Bloom or Grow, ironically, liquid fertilizers. I've been using their liquid tomato fertilizer on the dwarf tomato plants that I have on my deck, on my balcony table, and it's been working like a charm. I also love their indoor liquid fertilizer for houseplants because they make fertilizing so easy for the houseplants. I just tip the bottle into my watering can and off I go. And then if you're a granular person, you probably have heard of Espoma because they're kind of famous for their line of tones that have been around for 85 years. Holly Tone was like their most famous fertilizer, but now they've got an entire line. These tones are filled with long-lasting organic ingredients that break down slowly every time you water. So you just sprinkle these tone granules on your surface of your plant soil, and then you just water it, and it'll slowly break it down. And Espoma has a tone for whatever you're growing, like truly everything. If you go on their website, they have a tone for everything, whether it's garden tone, berry tone, rose tone, azalea tone, bulb tone, flower tone, and of course, tomato tone, which I love. They also have citrus tone, which Limey likes to drink up. To learn more about all of the indoor and outdoor products and tones that Espoma has to offer, you can visit espoma.com to see where your local Espoma dealers are, or you can click the link in the show notes to go to the Bloom & Grow Espoma Amazon storefront for a list of my curated favorites. And if we talk about how plants are such a beautiful source of connection in so many different capacities, and, you know, we talked about smell, how that smell can really bring you back to that memory, that connection with maybe someone who's passed, like me and my grandma. Taste is so similar, too. I mean, taste is such, food is such a important connector for everyone, right? And I think about, you know, I'm having my book club over next week, and I'm thinking about all of the different ways that I want to bring, you know, my chive blossoms into a vinegar and how I'm going to be able to create this really special meal for them that I made, you know, or how we cook recipes that come from our grandparents or our really good friends, how you can taste something and be immediately transported back. It's another incredibly powerful way to enrich that connection to yourself and to others around you.
So the first, earlier I mentioned about the, when we eat something, the first part of digestion is our vision. And the act of, I grew up near a fruit orchard. My partner is from South America, where part of your daily life, for me in summer at least, was picking a fruit off a tree and then taking that and eating it.
Yeah.
That whole act of sight, touch, to taste was this wonderful sort of loop, and that end reward of a tree-ripened peach, a perfectly ripe Jersey tomato, or whatever you're harvesting from your garden is really, you know, they always taste better. Am I right?
Absolutely.
It always tastes better when it comes from your own garden or it's right off of a tree. And we actually are doing that here in the Edible Academy just behind us, teaching kids about that, teaching New York City school children as well as people enrolled in our programs the joy of gardening, harvesting, cooking, and consuming their food.
I love
really
it.
Remarkable. Sort of forging those core memories.
Absolutely.
For our people.
We grew citrus indoors for a few years when I was crazy enough to do that, living in 500 square feet in New York City. And I have to say, I might be biased, but the mojito that I made with the lime that I harvested from the lime tree in my house was the best mojito I've ever tasted. I don't care if it's placebo effect, but the empowerment that I felt plucking that lime off, squeezing it up, making that cocktail to enjoy with my husband, there's no better feeling. There's no better feeling, that empowerment of growing your own.
The ultimate reward.
Absolutely. All right, we're working through these senses. Almost done. What's next?
Here.
After I did the research for this, I've probably made the most changes with hearing from the research from writing this book. And we are experiencing what I'm about to speak to in a deep way with these flight patterns that are interrupting our natural experience with the bird song and our sounds of nature. Silence is a sacred and scarce commodity in the United States. There are very few places that aren't affected by noise pollution. When I lived in New York City, I was lucky to be a sound enough sleeper that the speeding cars on the nearby highway and random 4 a.m. construction crews and garbage trucks never woke me up. But my sweet partner was not so lucky and needed to sleep with foam earbuds every night. When we moved last year to 5 acres in the middle of the woods, the silence was deafening. I only truly understood the concept of sound pollution and how accustomed I had grown to New York City's white noise, like these airplanes we've been experiencing, after I experienced its absence. My body and nervous system were so unused to being in the quiet, it actually triggered anxiety in those beginning few weeks. In those first few weeks, me and my husband would look at each other and marvel at how quiet it was outside.
I couldn't stop listening to the crescendo of wind rustling in the trees and the beautiful soprano trills of the local bird chatter, which we are enjoying today. As I began to unwind from my unwittingly noisy lifestyle, I slowly felt my entire being relax and embrace a level of calm that I thought was only reserved for vacations. It felt like my entire body unclenched a little bit, even though I never realized it was tense to begin with. I had been living with this tension for 10 years as I lived in New York City. We've all grown incredibly accustomed to the ambient noise of cars, factories, construction, airplanes, but our nervous systems have not. No one understands this better than Gordon Hempton, an acoustic ecologist known as the Sound Tracker. He travels the world capturing disappearing natural soundscapes and is known for his fight to preserve the natural soundscape of 1 square inch of the Ho Rainforest in Olympic National Park, which Hempton has described as the quietest place in the country. Hempton predicts that natural silence could be extinct in the next 10 years unless action is taken to preserve it. Since we can't put traffic, running refrigerators, washer dryers, or flight paths on mute, drowning them out with recordings of natural sounds is our next best option as a fun way to bring the outside in. This is something that I've started applying to my day-to-day life as a when I work from home, and it has wildly transformed my workday. I can't recommend it enough. So you can find recordings of natural soundscapes so easily on Spotify, YouTube, or Gordon's website. I found an 8-hour YouTube video of nature sounds that's filled with bird song, and I play it throughout my workday. Once the recording is over, I know that my 8-hour workday is up and it's time for me to get outside and leave my computer. The sounds of the rainforest have underscored the entire writing process for this book, and I personally find that I'm always more focused and productive when listening to sounds of the forest instead of office silence. There's something about birdsong that immediately, or for me personally, and once again, all these senses are so unique to each of us, birdsong and like babbling water, like a babbling brook, there is something that immediately signals like a full body whoosh of relaxation. For you, what are the sounds that stimulate you the most?
Oh, there's a long list there.
Yeah.
As a kid growing up in northern New Jersey, mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time running around the woods near my home.
Okay.
And it was there that I learned a very important thing is the joy of silence. And silence, not necessarily nothing around you.
Yeah.
It's you allowing yourself to be silent and calm and taking out yourself away from the voices and the lists in your head that you run through all day long. And surrounding yourself with those soft noises of running water, mm-hmm. the waves crashing on the ocean, this kind of, we know it is sometimes referred to as this white noise, not airplanes.
I know. Not perfect.
But the idea that these sounds are continuous and calm, rhythmic. I've had the great fortune to travel to some incredible places, including the Ho Rainforest, which really is one of the most incredible.
I'm so jealous.
Has anyone ever been there? I at least hope that one person, if you ever have an opportunity to travel in the Pacific Northwest, and it's a bit of a hike, from Seattle is a place called the Ho Rainforest. It is one of the few temperate rainforests in the world. Most rainforests are around the equator. This is in the Pacific Northwest, and it gets a tremendous amount of rain. It's probably one of the most magical places, and you can probably Google a picture of it now and understand why. The trees are completely carpeted in mosses. It looks like a dinosaur should come out of the ferns any minute. And when you get there, you hear the softness of the rain and the mist in the forest. And because of the way the environment is and the cushions of moss and the ferns and the leaves, it absorbs noise. It's like, as anyone, I hope people have done this, stood outside in a snowstorm.
And oh, yeah.
That sound of that silence is remarkable. Is because all of that softness absorbs sound. Mm-hmm. And the whole rainforest does that. And you realize there's a moment and you kind of feel this eerie presence. And what it is, it's the sound of that silence. Mm-hmm. And you wind up stopping and you realize that this surrounding you is this quiet that we don't experience in our lives. I'm a big music fan and always have been. And I realize that time goes on is the reason why I love music is it's a barrier to surround myself with sounds I enjoy, sounds that impact me in a positive way, rather than this unpredictable cacophony that can be a city or an urban environment. And probably my sound moment that always, I guess you could say, is a core memory for me. A year ago, after my mother passed, I traveled to Colombia with my partner in South America and went on a hike with some friends up into the mountains to observe orchids in the wild, because that's what I do in my free time. It's a weird, the weird things I do in my free time. But there was a moment where we reached the top of the hill, which was no small feat considering the altitude, and you stop. And as you're trying to catch your breath, you realize that you hear nothing but the wind, the rustling of some leaves, and it is quiet enough that even in the distance, the only other noise are the wings of the hummingbirds that are buzzing around you. And it, to me, was just such a remarkable moment, because that sound, you think about a hummingbird, it's not very loud, was loud in that environment. And so that hum in the distance of hearing the hummingbirds going from flower to flower was just the cool breeze itself. You realize how precious silence can be. And seeing people nodding over here, and I love that, is that, you know, take a walk in a snowstorm, go out into the woods, but go out further into the woods and sit and surround yourself and take in that silence. It's very, very healing. It's very therapeutic. And as you say, it kind of allows you to relax. It relieves so much of the tension. It really is something that is truly becoming precious.
Yeah. I think, too, especially for us living in New York City, where we're so used to these noises. And I just read the portion about it in the book, but I had no idea how much it affected me until I had the space to not be affected by it. And it's important. It's really important. And it can look really different for different people, right? You find what is your core memory? What is that hummingbird for you? And find it and replicate it to the best of your ability, whether you're doing it in nature when you can, or if you have to, find it in nature or find it, you know, find recordings of it. And speaking of the Ho rainforest, it's H-O-H. I talk about in my book, I actually have the coordinates for Gordon Hempton. There is one square inch that has no noise pollution. I believe the definition is there's no noise pollution for 15 minutes because there now is some flight. There's some flight patterns, but there are the coordinates for it if you want to go visit it. And he actually, on his website, which is also in my book, has recordings that you can go onto his website and listen to what actual true nature silence is. And it's pretty magical.
Definitely checking that out. Yes. For my stressful commute from New Jersey every day.
Yes. Last but not least.
Ironically. All right. What were we missing?
Sight. The irony of sight. Yes. Because we've been talking about it, so I feel like people would think, okay, this is great. We're landing on C because it's the one that we're the most acquainted with, and we'll wrap up and go to the garden. So, okay. This is the beginning of the book. It's called Open Your Eyes. Remember in the 90s when all romantic comedies had the female romantic lead who was nerdy and wore glasses and the male romantic lead who never saw her until she took her glasses off? And once she did, all of a sudden, he realized that she was beautiful and he'd been in love with her all along and they lived happily ever after? Remember when, like, every freaking movie had that plot set up in the 90s? In the story of my life, plants are the beautiful, smart, vibrant, multidimensional woman I was too much of a knucklehead to notice. Once I started successfully caring for plants and learning all about the joys of plant parenthood, I woke up to the sheer amazement that plants are so wonderful and all around us. My whole life, and I'll just speak to this, I won't read the book, but this was a very interesting, this concept is very interesting. You know, my whole life I was extremely disconnected with nature, and therefore I was also an epic plant killer. I couldn't keep a plant alive if someone paid me $1 million. But I noticed that when I was living in New York City, I would walk down the street and I wouldn't notice the trees on my street. I wouldn't notice the plants in the restaurant that we were in. They were inanimate to me. And once I started caring for plants on this small level in my little tiny apartment, and I started having potted houseplants, processing that they were living things actually opened my eyes to the entire world around me. And all of a sudden, I started walking down the street and I started seeing the tree that was outside of my apartment for 3 years, but I had just never seen it before. And I saw the rogue morning glory that someone had planted that was climbing up the chain link fence to the dump that we actually lived across the street of. This concept is actually a scientific concept that's been written about called plant blindness. I prefer not to refer to it as plant blindness because I don't think it's a fair comparison to those who actually struggle with blindness. So Baronda Montgomery, another botanist, has kind of renamed it plant bias. So I like to refer to it as plant bias. But there's this awakening that happens within us when we learn to care for plants, whether it's gardening, whether it's houseplants. It's this awakening of seeing nature again and seeing plants in this new way. And it's really magical. And we're lucky to have places like the Botanical Garden where we can come and see the plants on a much larger scale, because many people here might be living in small apartments like I was, and filling it with 100 houseplants was the only thing that I could do to connect with plants and reconnect with nature in that way that I was craving. So obviously, see is the most traditional sense that people might think, but it's not just seeing, it's re-seeing, it's opening ourselves up to viewing the world as this connected, living, breathing thing, as the plants communicate with each other, and as we are part of it. You know, we are nature, we are part of, we are living beings just like these trees and beautiful plants are. And the closer connected we can become to them, I think the world will become kinder because of it.
So for me, in terms of seeing, I've been influenced by a lot of remarkable teachers in my life and career. And one of the things that one of my science teachers all trained us to do was to learn how to train our eyes to truly see, to see a level of detail beyond that most people that would observe. And the way we did that was through drawing. Mm-hmm. And we would often sketch things, because you wind up training your eye, but you also train your other senses in that you, if you have to replicate something exactly, you have to truly observe its shape, size, form, colors, textures. And for many of people who have asked me as a professional horticulturist, like, what's your secret? Is it your education? Is it your soil, your fertilizer, your this, your that? They all want to know what that magic trick is. And I've always believed that it's observation is the most important skill you can have, whether it's an artist, a cook, a gardener, any career, is that by training yourself to see and truly observe, you learn the difference between too much water, too little water. Mm-hmm. You see the health of a color. I can tell by looking at the shade of green of a plant, mm-hmm. whether it needs water or it's dry, whether it's healthy, whether it's diseased. And you learn as time goes on that the level of observation that we are taught is only a small part of the ability of our senses.
Absolutely.
And when you talk to people who have impairments in their senses, what happens? The other senses become hyper-developed to compensate. Mm-hmm. There's a balance that needs to happen. And you learn that what you've been taught is only the beginning of what you can learn to see. Mm-hmm. And so over time, as you learn from these great teachers who teach you how to develop your powers of observation, how to truly see, understand, and interpret the world around you, not only can you become great gardeners, great chefs, great artists, it really is one of the most core of our senses. But without the others, it's almost useless. Absolutely. It really can't stand alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, practicing these senses and this connection with plants on a small level, being able to show up in this small space to this small plant or on a large scale to this garden, the specific practice of engaging our senses in this way, I believe if we do it on a routine basis, we cultivate a deeper sense of empathy that we can then take into the world, right? When we can listen, when we can learn to understand our plants, when we can tune ourselves to their frequency, we're able to take that into the world and maybe be a little bit kinder, maybe listen to our partner a little bit better, maybe be able to have that conversation, you know, with someone with a different perspective in a little bit more open-hearted, empathetic way. And I just think plants are the answer, right? Plants are the answer to making the world a kinder, greener place.
You won't get an argument from me about that.
Absolutely. Before we wrap up and head to the Rose Garden, we did want to offer, if anybody would like to be part of this episode, we would love to invite anyone up here to come and share. If you have a memory or a sense that you wanted to share with the audience, we'd love to hear from you. If any of this resonated with you and you want to share some sort of way that you like to engage your senses with your plants.
Do you want to open for couple of questions, if that was...
And or questions, absolutely.
So if anyone has a question for myself or Maria, obviously, we'd be happy to answer. Or if you'd like to come up and share a core memory or how you sense the garden before we go over to the Rose Garden and kind of practice what we've been preaching.
Yes.
And experience the Rose Garden on many different levels.
Yes.
Yes, my wife plants a lot of orchids, but it's mostly Phalaenopsis, if that's the right pronunciation,
yes.
And Cattleya. What other varieties would you recommend for house growth, and what tricks would you depart to keep them healthy and beautiful?
Well,
I think for the home gardener, the options are numerous. And when you're growing houseplants or orchids, one of the big messages I've always told, and I think we've even mentioned this before on a podcast we did together, is it's finding the plants that like you rather than the plants that you like.
Yes.
You have to admit, whether you're a good parent or a bad parent, do you like to water? Do you forget to water? But then matching that plant to the environment you have, because obviously your windowsill is not mine.
Yeah.
So if you're doing well with Phalaenopsis and Cattleyas, you've probably got decent light, a relatively warm space. Look into things like Oncidiums and their relatives, the Dancy Lady orchids, or if you have an area that might be a little more shaded, look into some of the Lady Slipper orchids, the Tropical Lady Slippers, Paphia pedilums. They're amongst some of the easiest and most rewarding to grow in the home. So if you're going to branch out, that would be what I would look for next.
Are there plants for sale in the bookshop right now or no?
Oh, there's always plants
always,
for sale
right?
in the shop.
So you can come get an orchid and get the book.
Come over, get your book signed. Because I got an advanced copy, I'll say this, and I read it. It was really an incredible exploration of horticulture and an angle that I have never seen explored in gardening books before.
Thank you,
so
Mark.
I was very, very impressed. Because, of course, we all have seen gardening books. It tells you, do this, don't do that, look at this, this is a picture of this. But it doesn't really tell you how to garden.
Yeah, and
it doesn't.
Feelings.
It tells you what to do, but it doesn't tell you truly how to garden.
Yeah.
And what I love about this, your book, is that it teaches people how to garden and be joyful and mindful and connect with that process. And so I was really very impressed with the book.
Gosh,
that was
Mark,
unplanned. She didn't know that was coming.
So. Let's make sure we get his quote for his endorsement. Yes. Huh? Oh, are you plugging his Instagram?
That's Ariel. Or she's Ariel works here in marketing. She wants me to plug my book, but we're here plugging Maria's book.
Well, maybe there's a special. The two books should make a nice package.
We gotta call the shop, see if they can do a 2-for-1.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You had a question, sir. Sight. Color is sight.
Absolutely. I mean, color I also feel like is so personal, I find. People really, when I look at different people's gardens and different people's collections, it's very interesting just personally to, I feel like the color, the choices of color is a real reflection of what their internal world looks like almost. Or whether or not I personally have all red and pink flowers in my garden because I'm obsessed with hummingbirds, so I want them to come. But I think color can be a very personal, wonderful way to express yourself, and so joyful in the garden to have a beautiful cut, you know, bouquet of fresh cut flowers. Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite flower?
A favorite flower?
Color?
Oh, my favorite color.
Yeah.
Okay. I've actually always have been drawn to shades of blue.
Yeah.
There's something about shades of blue. I'm surrounded by green, but there's something about shades of blue that I've always been fascinated by. I'm kind of obsessed with blue flowers, and I have a lot of them in my garden. But the interaction of color and humans is very important because color sets mood.
Yeah.
Color, the way we interact with color, there's a reason why green rooms are green is because green calms. Anyone ever wonder why fast food restaurants are yellows and oranges and reds? Because they find that actually stimulates the appetite. So how you interact with color in your environment is very important. I was down in the Rose Garden earlier with some friends, and I'm enamored with this rose down there called Poseidon. It has this beautiful smoky lavender blue color. Have it in my garden at home, and I absolutely love it. And I shared it with friends, and they go, eh. And I said, well, what do you like? And they chose the loudest, most obnoxious, bright-colored flower that I was just, you know. So that interaction with color sets our mood, sets our emotions, sets our environment.
Yeah.
And so part of our site, you know, the garden I create at home is something that is my calm space. Yeah. I have some areas where there's hot colors, but that's contained. So your energy and how what you project into the world is often reflected in the way you dress, mm-hmm. the way you garden, and what you surround yourself with. So depending whether you have, you know, sort of a hot personality or a cool personality, you'll see that reflected in how what you surround yourself with or what energy you draw from your environment.
Absolutely. For those who didn't hear, she said she planted a rose, she moved it, and it changed colors when you moved it.
So the color-changing rose, believe it or not, this is a common question. So what you observed was many roses, the way they reproduce them is they're grafted. They take one variety and attach it to the roots of another instead of these Frankenstein kind of roses. Well, what happened when you moved the rose is the top growth died off and the root then started to grow. Many root roses, one of the most vigorous ones is red. And quite often that's what happens is that top growth died and the undergrowth, the root sprouted and grew. That's how it changed color. Quite often, lavender and blue roses for many years were known as being kind of disease magnets. They weren't mm-hmm. the strongest. They were these unusual colors, but not the strongest plants. This variety, Poseidon, defies all that and is probably one of the most disease-resistant roses in our evaluations in the rose trials here. And it has that beautiful lavender blue color. So look for that variety. It's incredible. And then way up in the back. Oh, my goodness.
Ooh,
that's a long question.
Asked for the best rose growing tips.
I'm the orchid guy. I do pretty good with my roses. But some of the best things you can do for your roses is obviously proper pruning, proper feeding, making sure they get good sunlight. Roses are pretty high light requirement plants. And one of the things that people often forget is one of the best ways to keep your roses disease-free is to give them enough air circulation. Many of the fungi, especially black spot, which is a fungal disease that always attacks the leaves, one of the best ways to combat that is not through chemicals. It's through changing the environment, just like us. Mm-hmm. If you put yourself in a bad environment, you're going to get problems. You want to create the healthy environment around those plants. Don't grow your roses too crowded. Give them space. Give them that air circulation. And cultivate the soil around those plants. A healthy soil will prevent a lot of diseases. Many of the life cycle of diseases start on the plant, and they also go into the soil. So if you do proper mulching and composting and cultivate those good bacteria, they help destroy and eliminate a lot of the bad bacteria that cause diseases and some of the pests and insects in your garden. So healthy soil, healthy roots, healthy plants, and think about the environment more than it is about, you know, spraying a chemical or thing. Just feed them and give them some air and sunlight, just like you and I, and they'll do the best that they can.
Love it. Aunt Christina.
The comment was about how plants improve our environment. So plants, look, we grew up and we went to high school, right? What did we taught in school? Plants sit there, they photosynthesize, and they make oxygen. And that was the end of our lesson.
I know.
That's where it stopped. We all know, as gardeners being here, that plants are active and reactive organisms. They lean towards the light. They help our environment by adding oxygen, helping create a calm space. But plants do a lot more than just sit there and photosynthesize. And so by having plants in our environment does a lot for us in terms of stress, mm-hmm. benefits, even just wandering the rose garden, which we'll do in a few minutes. What it will do for the improvement of your overall mental health today, I think, is far more than just about anything you'll do.
Yes, absolutely. And hopefully there's a few less planes flying over the Rose Garden. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
You don't
hear
it as much down there.
Yeah. Anyone else? Mom. Mama Fiala, everyone. Do you want the microphone? Okay.
I have a feeling she might be roasting you here.
I know. I'm a little careful. Nervous.
Here comes Mom with the ultimate truth. Yeah.
While Maria is an extraordinary indoor gardener, her mother is terrible indoor gardener, horrible indoor gardener. I buy these herbs. I bring them inside. I kill them. I buy the herbs. I bring them inside. They're dying. I said, something's wrong. I buy the herbs. I put them at my front step, just outside by my front step. I don't water them. I don't do anything to them. I let the sun look at them. I let the rain wet them. They love life. They roll all over the walkway. They crawl between. You see this here? The oregano finds cement. I don't know how oregano lives in cement. Oregano lives in cement. But I have all these herbs that are so happy, happy in a different place, not inside my house. But then I think, okay, this is great. I have abundance of herbs. But then I have to go to see a friend of mine. And I said, oh, I don't have time to get them a plant or anything. So I cut a hydrangea. And then I cut a couple of stalks of my basil because I go big. I don't just go with one pot. I go with 10 pots. I got a lot of basil going on. I got enough for the whole town. I cut and I put it around that hydrangea and I put my Reynolds wrap. And I make the most beautiful little bouquet that when you take it to someone's house, they not only get your flower, they get something to make dinner with. And so it's, if it's rosemary, if it's oregano, if it's basil, if it's thyme, those are all beautiful additions to any bouquet you might make for someone. And I'd strongly recommend that you do that. Buy some herbs. Hopefully you're luckier than I am indoors. But keep them in mind when you give gifts to people. You don't have to give them the dirt. Nobody wants dirt. But you give them a bouquet in Reynolds wrap, they'll be really happy.
The new edible arrangement. Yes. I love it.
I have the new edible arrangement. So anyway, but I'm very proud of my girl.
Oh, thank you, Mom. Thank you, Mom. I'm growing cut flowers this summer for the first time with the specific intention to be able to be the girl who shows up with a bouquet of herbs and flowers like my mom at all the parties. Also, if you want to create a sensory experience at your home for your guests, planting some sort of scented plant at your walkway, like my mom just mentioned, actually, is a wonderful way for someone to walk through maybe some potted lavender, maybe some potted herbs. And when they walk up to your front door, they get to waft in a nice little scent. It really sets up a visit in a really nice way. So I think it's time for us to go practice what we preach now. So what we're going to do, we're going to wrap up here. We can all just wander down to the Rose Garden, put your phones away, take what we discussed today, and really take some intentional quiet time to figure out how you can play with all five of your senses in the garden and practice what we preach, right? Enjoy the Rose Garden. Mark and I will both be there. And then we'd love to see you in the bookshop. Growing Joy is on sale. I want a photo with the first person who buys it. You guys are the first people who get access to Growing Joy because the pub date is June 28th. So thank you very much, the Botanical Garden, for hosting me. We'll promenade over to the Rose Garden and we'll see you in the bookshop.
But I just want to say a final thank you to Maria for being here and helping inspire this afternoon, but also helping inspire me to get reconnected to my garden. Aww. So I look forward to meeting and talking with all of you down in the Rose Garden. I think it'll be great. And if you haven't been there yet, you're in for a real, real sensory treat. Oh. So thank you for coming today.
I'm so excited. And make sure you're subscribed to the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast on your favorite podcast player. This episode will air in about a month.
It's a great podcast.
Mark has been on many episodes, so you can scroll the feed. Yeah, listen to the Begonia episode. It's really good. but we will see you all in the Rose Garden shortly. Thank you so much to New York Botanical Garden and Mark Hatchadurian for their unbelievable support for the launch of Growing Joy.
Plant friends, I can't tell you like what a full circle moment this was. I know I said in the intro, you know, the first event I did was with them, and it was this like rinky-dink little pop-up poster about my podcast and the fact that my book is there in one of the most amazing bookstores. It was such a pinch me moment. That day was so overwhelming and surreal. And I'm just really so thankful for their continued support. They're incredible people at the New York Botanical Garden. I can't recommend visiting enough. Literally, whatever season you're in, if you are a local or if you're visiting, there's always an amazing installation. The conservatory is always incredible. They've always got interesting programs running. So please go check it out. And thank you to Mark Hachadurian. You can check him out on Instagram at Orchid Mark. That's Mark with a C. He's just the greatest. I just freaking adore him so much. And of course, to you, my sweet plant friends, thank you. If you have already ordered the book, I so appreciate you. Thank you so much. If you haven't yet, you're welcome to go to your local bookshop, your indie book dealer. You can order online. All the links for the books are in the show notes. And I would be so thankful if you left a review for the book on Goodreads. This is something that I learned about as being an author because I wasn't on Goodreads before, but apparently Goodreads is like a whole thing. And if you have a lot of reviews on Goodreads, it's apparently a very important thing for the publisher. So if you bought the book on Goodreads or Amazon or Barnes & Noble, if you could leave a review wherever you bought your book, that would be amazing. Plant friends, I'm feeling overwhelmed with gratitude and awe and, I don't know, a little bit of numbness, but yet some emotions just about this whole process. And I know many of you have been along for the whole ride with me, so man, I'm so thankful. And as I am in this crazy season of growth after a season of extreme dormancy, which you learn about if you read the book, I'm really trying to practice what I preach and engage my five senses every morning with my plants before, you know, every morning I look at a plant before I look at a screen. And every morning I'm trying to engage my five senses and really practice what this book preaches and take this opportunity to just soak up Mother Nature and all of the amazing things that she has to offer and our house plants. I got so many Hoyas in the mail the other day. So I hope that you also take some time after you've listened to this episode to engage a sense that might have been feeling a little stagnant, you know, go outside, get with your plants indoors and take something from this episode and apply it this weekend. And let me know on Instagram or in the Garden Party platform how you ended up engaging your senses in a new way. So my sweet plant friends, we've got more episodes coming. So until next time, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friend, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure that you're subscribed to the show on your preferred podcast player so you never miss an episode. And while you're there subscribing, if you wouldn't mind clicking over to the review section and leaving us a review, that would be tremendous. Reviews are so helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thank you so much in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Bloom and Grow content, we have so many fun options for you that I want to tell you about. First off, there is the free Bloom and Grow Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free, it's super fun, and it only takes 3 minutes to complete. You take the test and you get your plant parent personality profile, and with that, you get a list of your strengths and weaknesses as a plant parent, and most importantly, my curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are perfectly suited for you and your planty interests based on your results. The test lives at bloomandgrowradio.com/personality and can always be found in the show notes of this episode. Okay, plant friends, here's the really good stuff. If you are looking to really grow and up-level your plant parent skills this year, I cordially and proudly invite you to join the Bloom and Grow Virtual Garden Society, rooted in high-quality education and plant community. Plant friends, this is not your grandma's garden society. It's virtual and therefore connects you with plant friends around the world, accessed via our proprietary Garden Party platform and app, and has the best educational and community-based content and resources available to anyone. When you join, you get immediate access to the entire Bloom and Grow Garden Party platform and app, which is our exclusive space, off social media, algorithm-free, troll-free, with tons of amazing ways to meet other plant parents like you, like regional groups, daily conversation prompts, and even a plant swap space, which is pretty cool. And in addition to that, you get all of the exclusive premium society content, which is 3 monthly live calls with myself and our horticulturist in residence and beloved Bloom and Grow Radio guest, Leslie Halleck.
all in the interest of helping you grow. Leslie hosts monthly Node of Knowledge plant science lectures and monthly office hours, which we call AHAs or Ask Our Horticulturist Anythings, where you can troubleshoot your personal plant collection problems with her. Think about that. You have access to a horticulturist to troubleshoot your personal plant care issues. So amazing. And then I host monthly Growing Joy calls for community development and to explore the plant care, self-care aspect of plant parenthood. Plus, when you join, you not only get access to the upcoming live calls, but you get full access to all of the replays of previous calls and lectures, like The Science of Plant Dormancy or Grow Lights 101 and beyond. So you can binge your way to your best year yet of plant parenthood. Please come join us. We're having so much fun. Learn more by clicking the link in the show notes or visiting jointhegardensociety.com. For anything else, plant friend, I'm here for you. Feel free to drop me a line when you have an idea for an episode, an event, or even if you're a planty business interested in sponsoring the show. And of course, follow me on Instagram and TikTok for daily planty silliness, musings, and behind-the-scenes podcast content. Thank you again for listening to Bloom and Grow Radio. It is my true honor and delight to always help you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group. So if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection.
So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.